Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, the voice of reverse mortgages and seniors, hosted by Dirk Gray. My NMLS number is 222-785, New Mexico Reverse Mortgages, NMLS number is 1102-656. This information is not from HUD or FHA and was not approved by HUD or a government agency. If the borrower does not meet loan obligations, such as taxes and insurance, then the loan will need to be repaid. The information given during the show is not meant to be all-inclusive. Any guests on the show are not endorsed by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage. This show is brought to you by our producer, New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, helping you move forward in reverse. Our website is www.reversenm.com, and our office phone number is 505-897-4900. All right, today on the show, my guest is Doug Lindsay. Doug is a CFP, a Certified Financial Planner, with MGM LLC. And Doug is also a past president of the Financial Planners Association. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you very much, Dirk. It's good to be here.
Well, we finally made it.
We did. We had to try a lot of times before I could join you.
Well, you know what? I'm glad we got it done and glad to have you here today. All right. Look, we're going to talk about Social Security and also Medicare. So let's begin with the Social Security. When should I apply?
Good question, Dirk. That's kind of the most common question we take in my office. And the answer really depends on a lot of different things. So it's not always an easy answer. Sometimes it is, but not always. So what we want to talk about if you're trying to decide if you're going to start with Social Security is, first of all, your health status. If your health is good and you expect to live a long life, then it's better for you to wait to start. But if you've got some question marks on your health, then that leans us towards wanting to start you earlier. So life expectancy plays into that. The life expectancy of you can be tied back to your parents and your family and your grandparents. So if your parents lived a good long life, there's some indications that that means you're going to live a good long life. So health status, life expectancy, also your need for income. So do you have other resources that you could use if you were going to wait and start Social Security later? Whether or not you plan to work plays into this as well. So there's a rule called the earnings test that says basically if you are under full retirement age, which for most folks is age 66, then you can only earn so much money and still collect your Social Security check. In 2018, that number is about $17,000, just a little over $17,000.
So if I earn, if I'm taking Social Security and I earn over $17,000, that's a potential problem.
That's right. And so the way the rule works is that for every $2 you earn over that $17,000 bar, $1 will be withheld from your Social Security check. So somebody who's in, you know, a part-time job, kind of an easier, lower-paying job, when they're retired and collecting Social Security, they're going to be fine as long as they don't break that $17,000 barrier. At $17,000, they can collect Social Security all day long under full retirement age. But once they break the $17,000 number, then that's where this earnings test applies. So somebody who's making $50,000 or $60,000, if you do the math, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 of their Social Security is going to be withheld. And for most people, that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of value to starting Social Security before full retirement age if you're still going to work and make more than that $17,000.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question because, see, I'm right there.
Okay.
I actually turned 62 January 3rd. So my wife and I have been talking about this, and I'm kind of the impression that I would probably wait till I'm 66. But I did a little bit of math, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am.
We'll allow it.
The amount of money, the difference between the two, I can't remember what the figure was. But if I multiplied what I'd be leaving on the table over the 4 years and divided it by what I'd be gaining when I'm 66. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you.
it took a long time to recoup that money.
It does, and you're right. And a lot of people do this math, and we call it a break-even analysis, and that's basically what you were doing. And kind of depending on which numbers you're looking at, it usually takes out to about age 80 in order to even up the buckets, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of what you're describing is that if you start at 62, you get a smaller number. If you wait till 66, the number gets bigger. And if you wait till 70, it goes up by 8% a year each year from 66 to 70. So there's a delta, a difference between the age 62 and the age 70 number that you're going to collect for a certain number of years before you can, quote-unquote, catch up. So 80 is usually about the break-even point. And we'll probably talk about this a little more in the show, but the other thing to think about is that Social Security is... It's not just break-even analysis. It's not just about the numbers, because you got to think about it like longevity insurance. So, for example, if you wait until age 70 and you're making $500 or $1,000 more than you would have if you had started earlier, the 90-year-old version of you is really happy that you waited to collect this bigger check.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when we think about it as longevity insurance, we kind of think about, you know, would you do break-even analysis on your homeowner's insurance? And the answer is not usually. You wouldn't do break-even analysis. You wouldn't say, I'm spending $800 a year for my home insurance, but I'm not getting anything unless my home burns down. And then you get paid. And so does that mean you won? Did you win because your home burnt down? Well, no, it's not. Oh, the break-even analysis is one step of many in this decision. So great question. And in this whether or not you plan to work scenario, you can also put in there survivor needs. So the way Social Security basically works for a couple is, let's say your number was $2,000 per month. Your Social Security check was $2,000 per month. And your wife's number was $1,200 per month. Well, if those are your age 70 numbers, and the two of you are marching along happily collecting the $2,000 and the $1,200, and then you're both age 80 and one of you passes away, well, the $2,000 number sticks to the survivor. The bigger number sticks to the survivor. And that doesn't matter whether it's you or your spouse. That bigger number sticks. And so another thing to consider when you're trying to decide when to claim is, what are the survivor needs of your spouse? And the survivor is going to be really happy that one of you waited until 70 and got that check up as big as you could. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense, Doug. Okay.
So that's part of the when should I apply. And I mentioned full retirement age. So for most folks, that's 66. But Congress changed the rules a little bit. And so folks who were born in 1960 or later, they have to start Social Security full retirement age at 67. So to kind of go high level on the rules, everybody can start at 62. Everybody can wait until age 70 and get that bigger benefit. But the full retirement age is a little bit different depending on your birth year. So folks who were born before 1955, they're all age 66 is their full retirement age. Folks who were born in 1960 or later, their full retirement age is 67. And the folks who were born in those few years before, there's a bump by 2 months for each year. So, for example, in 1955, your full retirement age is 66 and 2 months. If you were born in 1956, your full retirement age is 66 and 4 months, et cetera. So they were gradually raising the retirement age.
Well, you know, this is fascinating stuff for me, and I think it also points out why you need to have somebody like you to lead you through making the best choices.
Yeah, you know, it's a fairly complicated system, and it applies to all of us. So all of us are eligible to collect Social Security for the most part. There's a few exceptions. If you were a government employee and didn't pay into the system, you might have your own. But I would bet that 98% of your listeners are going to collect Social Security someday, if they're not already.
Right. Okay, well, I'm glad I see this question. Will Social Security be there for me? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, good question. So we get this question a lot in my office, and you know, it's understandable. It's human emotion to listen to the news and worry about Social Security running out of money. And sometimes we misunderstand the headline when it says Social Security is scheduled to run out of money in 2033.
Mm-hmm.
And what that really means is behind the scenes, this money is coming from everybody's paycheck. So as an employee, we pay 6% and change into the Social Security system, and our employer matches that and pays another 6% and change into the system. If you're lucky enough to be self-employed, you get to pay both sides of that.
Uh-huh.
So thanks to those self-employed folks for that. We've got all of those folks in the country who are working are paying money into the system. And so even if the trust fund that we've got going so far did run out of money, there's still enough money in the funds that are coming from people's paychecks to cover 75% of all the benefits of Social Security.
Okay, great. That's a good segue. It's time for a break. You're listening to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, here on 1600 AM and 93.7 FM, News Radio KIVA. I'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, with your host, Dirk Gray. Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, is heard weekly on Saturdays, beginning at 10 a.m. Mountain Time, and streams to a global audience. Before I continue my conversation with Doug, in our segment called Because You're a Senior, these are available to you. Last week, we discussed Chili's 10% off for those 55-plus, and Jack in the Box is up to 20% off for those 55-plus. And, you know, I always say this, and I hope you're listening, never be ashamed to ask for your discount. Why pay full price when you don't need to? This week, I want to tell you about Walgreens Senior Day. Once-a-month discounts are available for Balance Reward card members 55-plus or Balance Reward card members that are also AARP members. Discounts include 20% off in-store or 10% off online. And UPS is offering AARP members 15% off eligible products and services and 5% off domestic and international UPS shipping, and it varies by location, so be sure to check on it. So every week, listen for Because You're a Senior. These are available to you. All right, I'm continuing my conversation with Doug Lindsay. Doug is a certified financial planner with MGM LLC, and Doug, you wanted to kind of wrap up some final thoughts on why will Social Security be there for me?
Yeah, you bet. So in the last segment, I mentioned the trust fund. So there's this fund that's been building up because essentially we've been collecting more in payroll taxes than we've been spending on Medicare benefits. And so by law, that extra money has to go into a special bond. And we're at about the tipping point where so many seniors are retiring that the amount of money we're collecting isn't covering the bill. And so we're starting to lean into those bonds and spend them. And when you hear on the news that Social Security is going to run out of money, what they're talking about is that stack of bonds being gone. And the latest report estimates that they're going to be finished and the money will be gone in about 2034. And then when that money's all gone, we'll still have enough money in the system through the collection of payroll taxes to pay 75% of benefit. So between now and then, the challenge for our politicians is to come to some kind of collective agreement about how we're going to change things so that we can go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different ideas that have been proposed, including raising the retirement age again, changing the way we do the cost of living calculation, lowering benefits for future retirees, raising the payroll tax, and making a lot of changes like those is politically difficult, though, because essentially mm-hmm. it boils down to cutting benefits or raising taxes.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. All right, let's talk about how the benefit is calculated.
Sure, you bet. So the way Social Security is calculated is that once you turn 62, each of your previous year's earnings are tallied up and indexed for inflation. They take the highest 35 years of earnings. So some folks trip up here and think they take the most recent 35 years, but that's not true. They sort your earnings by the biggest years salary first, all the way down to the smallest. And then they index them for inflation. So, for example, your first job in 1980 when you made, you know, $25,000 mm-hmm. is equivalent to $75,000 now. So they take all 35 of those, they add them up, and they get an average. And then that average gets pushed through a formula, so out comes your monthly benefit. So the more you make in your job, the bigger your benefit's going to be. If you're somebody who's got a history of employment where you took some time off to maybe care for a loved one or raise some kids or, you know, get a college degree or go back to school, and you've got zeros in your list, in your list of salaries, then working a few more years and replacing some of those zeros with numbers is a good idea because it'll help your Social Security benefit be bigger.
Okay. Huh. Interesting. All right. How do spousal benefits and survivor benefits work? You talked a little bit about that in your introduction.
I did. So the way that spousal benefits work, and this comes as a surprise to some folks, but you don't have to have a work history in order to collect a Social Security check. Your spouse's work history can stand in for your own. So I'll give you an example. I have some clients that are in their 80s, and I didn't ever have the conversation with the two of them about what exactly their Social Security benefits were, because when I first started working with them, they were way over 70 years old, and it just didn't cross my mind initially mm-hmm. to have a conversation. But as I got to know them better, I kept asking about it, and they didn't really want to talk about it. Eventually, though, we got to know each other well enough where they shared it with me, and they had worked together in a business, and the husband had collected the salary, but the wife had not collected a salary in the business. So when you looked at her Social Security record, it was all zeros. But he was collecting a $2,000 a month Social Security check. Well, the way spousal benefits work is that the spouse is due 50% of her husband's benefit in this case, and she could have started collecting that as early as 66. Actually, as early as 62, but she's eligible at 62. But at 66, she gets the full 50% of his age 66 number. So essentially what this means is she was foregoing about $1,000 worth of benefit for all those years from 66 to in her early 80s when I finally figured out what was going on.
Really?
Yeah,
huh.
So spousal benefits are surprising to some folks, but the main idea is that I can collect all of my own benefit or I can collect half of my spouse's benefit.
Okay.
And there are some technical rules there about when you start and how it works, but that's the gist of it. So just because you have a low record of earnings, or if you have no earnings, if you're married, it you can still collect on your spouse.
And okay, and survivor benefits.
Right. So survivor benefits, we talked about this a little bit earlier. The basic idea is that if a couple is claiming Social Security and one of them dies, the bigger benefit is going to stick to the surviving spouse. So,
but they lose the lower one.
They do. So in a family situation where, let's say, he's earning a $2,000 check and she's earning a $1,200 check, the family's the household income is $3,200. But as soon as somebody passes away, then the smaller benefit, the $1,200, will stop, but the $2,000 benefit will continue. There's some technical rules in this one as well, depending on how old the spouse was who died, how old they were when they started, as well as how old the person who's the survivor is claiming, how old they are when they start. So there's some technicalities there that can adjust that number, but this is the general idea, that the bigger benefit sticks.
Well, let me just ask you a general question. How many do the majority of people take their Social Security benefits at 62?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I actually have some statistics here for you. 38% of men and 43% of women start their Social Security at age 62. And I think this is an emotional decision for some folks. The idea is a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to go ahead and get started soon because I'm worried that I'm going to pass away or I'm going to run out of money. Only 1% of men and 2% of women wait until age 70 to claim their Social Security benefit. And I think this is a mistake for a lot of folks. I'm of the mind that if I have other resources I can use, I want to go ahead and let that Social Security check get really big and pass the risk back to the government and the other the folks in the United States who are still working. So those are the folks who are carrying my Social Security check. And I think it's fair and fine to have some assets at risk in the stock and bond market.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at this Social Security check as a really valuable asset.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as my health is good and I have other resources I can use, I really like the idea of holding off until age 70 or as late as you can wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? In my business, which you know is reverse mortgages, occasionally we'll have somebody come in and kind of use it as a delay bridge. They'll create a reverse mortgage and draw money out of it as they need it, but so they can wait until they get a little bit older and get their full benefit from Social Security.
That's right. I really like that idea, and the reverse mortgages are becoming more popular in the financial planning circles. There have been articles in some of our professional journals in the last year or two that are really saying that we need to look closely at how reverse mortgages work, and they can be helpful in other ways too. I have a client right now who's considering a reverse mortgage, and part of the conversation is they're drawing on their portfolio for mm-hmm. spending, and they've got this really valuable asset in their home. Well, why don't we set up a reverse mortgage, and in a year where the stock market is really down mm-hmm. and their portfolio is really down, this client's looking at leaning into their reverse mortgage mm-hmm. to make their to pull their essentially their salary for the year, mm-hmm. and they're waiting for the stock market to come back up before they turn back to using that as the asset.
Yeah, we see that occasionally, Doug. I think it's a good strategy.
Yeah, me as well.
All right, let's talk about a marriage or divorce and the impact on Social Security benefits.
Yeah, you bet. So I don't like to be a love counselor, but occasionally I get to be. So I got a couple examples here for you. So we've got some made-up characters. We've got Brad, age 66, Angelina, age 66. Both are divorced, but they're in love. Each one is collecting benefits on their living ex-spouse. So you can collect Social Security benefits on your ex-spouse. And this couple is going to be surprised to learn that if they get married, that their ex-spousal benefits have to stop, because now they're a new married unit and the rules apply to them differently uh-huh. than when they're not married. So in this case, Brad and Angelina should probably stay separate
mm-hmm.
and keep collecting those ex-spouse benefits.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea. So, all right. Well, you've got about 30 seconds left.
Okay.
So go ahead and wrap up, or what would you like to talk about briefly?
Yeah, so here's another fast example. So if there's a couple who he's 58, she's 62, and they're both widowed, but they're in love, should they get married? Well, it depends, right? So Mary's 62. She can keep collecting her survivor benefit on her deceased spouse because she's over the age of 60. But if Jim's doing the same thing, because he's under 60, he can't collect on his deceased spouse's benefit. So they probably should wait until he turns 60.
All right. Fascinating stuff, Doug. It's time for a break. You're listening to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage with your host, Dirk Gray. I'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage with your host, Dirk Gray. Gray Matters is heard weekly on Saturdays beginning at 10 a.m. Mountain Time and streams to a global audience. All right, I'm continuing my conversation with Doug Lindsay. He's a certified financial planner with MGM LLC, and I know that you want to talk a little bit more about divorce, Doug, as it relates to Social Security.
You bet. So we talked about marriage, so let's talk about the flip side. So I got a couple examples for you here. So again, random names. Donald, age 70, and Melania, age 47, have been married for 9 years, but they hate each other. Should they get a divorce? And here's how the rules work, all right? So if you're married for at least 10 years, then you can collect ex-spousal benefits and survivor benefits once your ex-spouse passes. If you're married for less than 10 years, you don't qualify for that. So if I'm advising this couple and I know that they've been married for 9 years, I'm going to suggest they stick it out for one more year so that both parties can collect ex-spousal benefits. Another example here, so again, made-up names. So Bill's 65 and Hillary's 65, and they've been married for 40 years. They love each other, but they also like money. Should they get a divorce? And the answer is probably not, right? Because they both would qualify for ex-spousal benefits, but they're going to, in the long run, probably find that their survivor benefit that they're going to get from one spouse or the other is better than what they'd get if they were on their own. So there are rules about divorce, and there's actually a sticky rule that Bill and Hillary may have been able to use. It's one that I've tried to convince my wife that I'm going to use, and that is there are cases where when we get divorced, I can actually make more money by being divorced than I can by staying with my spouse. So, Cindy, if you're listening, you know I'm kidding. But my personal strategy is at age 65, I'm going to get a divorce, and then each of us can claim our ex-spousal benefit starting at age 67. And then we could collect our ex-spousal benefit on each other for 3 years, and then we can remarry at age 70. But you can't do that if you're married.
You know what? Just listening to you, what's coming to mind is this is complicated.
Yeah.
And you really need to, depending on your situation, or maybe before your situation evolves, sit down and talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. We love to talk to folks about Social Security. I teach a class at UNM's continuing education program, the OSHER program, and we have a lot of folks come in and just talk through the situation. So folks are free to call our office and make an appointment, and we'll just sit down and visit about how their Social Security is going to play out. If it turns out to be really complicated, they can hire us to help them, but that initial consult is always free.
Doug, do you have a calendar of when you teach?
You know, folks can go to the OSHER, O-S-H-E-R, website, and they can search for the word SAVVY, S-A-V-V-Y, because all of our courses start with the word SAVVY. So we have SAVVY Social Security, SAVVY Medicare,
okay,
and SAVVY Cybersecurity.
Okay, great. All right, well, what if I'm going to keep working and I want to collect Social Security too?
Yeah, you bet. You and I talked a little bit about this earlier in the show. This is where the annual earnings test comes into play. So once you're age 66 or full retirement age for some folks, 67, you can collect Social Security and earn as much as you want. But before then, if you decide to claim Social Security, say at age 62 when you're first eligible, whether or not you work impacts your Social Security check. So the earnings test number is around that 17,000 number. They just changed it for 2018, and I want to say it's $17,040. But every $2 you make over that 17,000 bar, they're going to withhold $1 of your Social Security check. So if you go out and make, say, $20,000 in a job, you're roughly $3,000 over the bar. Divide that in half, they're going to collect, they're going to keep back $1,500 worth of your Social Security checks. So let's say your check happens to be $750 a month. They're going to keep back 2 months. They're going to keep 2 months worth of Social Security, and then you're going to get to keep the other 10 months of Social Security.
So they take the full amount out of those two.
They do. That's right. So they keep, essentially, they ask you at the end of the year how much you are projecting that you're going to make, and then they start that calculation up for the following year. So they would withhold, in our example, they would withhold your January and your February check. Benefits would start again in March. And then at the end of the year, there's kind of a settling up process. So if you were wrong in your estimate, if you were high or low, then you kind of work with the Social Security office to settle up as you go into the next year. But once you turn full retirement age, then there's a different formula for this. But essentially, you can make as much as you want once you're age 66.
Okay. How will my Social Security benefit be taxed?
Yeah, great question. So a lot of folks are surprised to learn that Social Security benefits may be taxable at all. And the answer is that they can be. So it depends, like a lot of things in tax, it depends on a lot of different variables. There's a taxability chart that you can look up on the Internet or in the IRS website, and it'll basically show you If you're married filing jointly, or if you're single, depending on your filing status, how much you can make before your Social Security becomes taxable. So I'll give you one example. A couple who's married filing jointly, they have an income calculation where essentially they can make up to $32,000. Once they get to $32,000, then some of their Social Security may be taxable. Once they break over $44,000, 85% of their Social Security is taxable. So regardless of how much you make, say there's a couple that makes $100,000, only 85% of your Social Security is taxable. So you get a break on that 15% no matter what. Some folks who make less can pay zero on their Social Security. Some folks who make more can pay up to 85% of their Social Security is taxable. Now, to be clear, not an 85% tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that 85% of your check, let's say you make $10,000 in Social Security checks in a year, $8,500 of that might be taxable at your income rate.
At your income rate, okay.
That's right. That's right. And so this calculation, if somebody who's kind of in the middle, if they're making under the $32,000, they're not going to owe tax. If they're making over the $44,000, they're going to owe tax on 85%. The middle is where people get caught sometimes. And what happens there is, let's say you call my office and you want to make a withdrawal to buy a motorcycle from your IRA, and you need $5,000. Well, normally you would think in your mind, well, I'm just going to pay my 15% marginal tax rate on that $5,000, because money that comes out of an IRA is taxable as ordinary income. So in your mind, you're thinking, oh, I owe about 15%. Oh, that's about $750. But what people forget is that the money they take out of their IRA becomes taxable income, which changes the calculation for the taxability of their Social Security.
Hmm.
And so what happens is you've now exposed more of your Social Security dollars to tax as well. And if the formula is just wrong, is going just against you, that marginal rate can be as high as 45% on those dollars that you draw out that are taxed at ordinary income rates and that cause your Social Security to be taxed. So there's some middle ground here where you got to be really careful.
One of the things that you reminded me of when you were talking about that, is that when people pull money from a reverse mortgage, it's not taxed.
It's not taxed at all?
It's not taxable because it's considered, it's a loan. So it's not taxed.
Good. So in that situation, somebody who's using the reverse mortgage to help them with their retirement planning wouldn't have to worry about the taxation of Social Security if they draw money out against the reverse mortgage.
Right.
Nice.
Yep,
good
exactly.
to know.
All right. Okay. Well, let's move on to Medicare. Again, this is another question. Lois and I have been talking about these things for a number of months now. When do I need to enroll in Medicare?
Well, most folks have probably heard that the age 65 is the magic age of when to start Medicare, and that's true most of the time. Basically, for people who are working, they're kind of accustomed to their employer providing health insurance. And once you turn age 65, Medicare is going to be your primary payer instead. But there's a small, actually it's a fairly large group of people who get confused here, because there's a rule that basically says if your employer group plan covers 20 or more employees, then you do not have to enroll in Medicare when you turn age 65. So if you're still working, this isn't for retirees, but mm-hmm. if you're still working, for example, I have a client who works for Stryker and he's turning 65. But he works for a company that's more than 20 employees. So he's going to continue working past 65, but he can also stay on his group health insurance mm-hmm. past age 65. So this age 65 is the common age for most folks. They call it the initial enrollment period, is when you turn 65. Technically, you have 3 months before your 65th birth month, the month of your 65th birthday, and the 3 months afterwards to sign up. If you're not working for one of these large employers. And the gotcha is that if you don't, there's a penalty. If you come in later and you were supposed to come in earlier, there's a penalty. So you got to be careful about signing up at the right time.
So the 3 months, your birth month, and 3 months after.
That's right.
Okay.
And then these folks that these folks who have employment at one of these large employers, they have another enrollment period that's called the special enrollment period. I wish it was just called the retired enrollment period, because essentially, when, for example, when my client at Stryker retires, let's say he retires at age 70, he can sign up for Medicare then and not worry about paying a penalty.
Okay. Okay, so you talked about what happens if I don't. You just mean you're going to get penalized.
Yeah, so there's actually three things to think about if you don't sign up at the right time. So first of all, you may pay these late enrollment period penalties. And the way that works is for every full year, for every full 12 months that you didn't sign up, that you should have signed up, your premium is going to go up by 10%. So what that means right now, most people are paying $135 a month for their Part B, B like boy, premium. If they missed it by 2 years, it's going to be 10% penalty for year one, $13.50. 10% penalty for year two, another $13.50, added up, $27. So their Part B premium is going to cost them $27 more per year for the rest of their life.
Okay, now to explain why you said Part B.
So there's different parts of Medicare, and Part B is the part that most of us have to pay for. Everybody pays for when they sign up for Medicare. There's a lot of different parts of Medicare. Part A is the hospital insurance. And the way I remember this is if you're going to the hospital, you usually ride in an ambulance. An ambulance starts with an A.
Okay.
And so Part A is ambulance hospital insurance.
Mm-hmm.
If you've worked more than 10 years, you qualify to get Part A for free. It's a benefit that you don't have to pay for. Part B, is the doctor's insurance and the outpatient's insurance. The way I remember this one is we all want our kids to be doctors when they grow up, so I say B is the doctor's insurance, right? That one costs, and it can cost, the base cost right now is $135 per person to have Part B insurance. And if you're already collecting Social Security, they'll take that right out of your check. Otherwise, you have to make arrangements to make the payment.
Okay, great. We've gotten through another segment, Doug. It's time for a break. You're listening to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage. Our phone number is 897-4900. I'm Dirk Gray. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage with your host, Dirk Gray. I'm in my last segment. I'm talking to Doug Lindsay. Doug is a certified financial planner with MGM LLC. And Doug, we've been talking about Social Security this morning and Medicare, and I believe you wanted to talk more about the parts of Medicare.
Yeah, you bet. So we talked a little bit about Part A, the hospital insurance, and Part B, the doctor's insurance. Those are parts of the program that they call Original Medicare. So A and B have been around a long time. Well, some years ago, they added a Part D, like D like drug. That one's easy to remember because D like drug. There's a prescription drug coverage program that you need to buy also. So once you decide that it's time to start Medicare because you've turned 65 or you've retired from your large employer, then you're also going to have a choice. There's no choice about Parts A and B. Everybody gets those, and everybody pays for B. Where it gets tricky is there's a choice, though, about what you do from there. So Original Medicare has some gaps in it. For example, when you go to visit a doctor, Original Medicare only pays 80% of your doctor's bill, and you get to pay the other 20%. So historically, folks have used private insurance to fill the gap, and so many of your listeners may have heard about gap insurance. It's also called supplemental insurance. Lots of different companies sell this, but you really need to consider buying that as part of the full package. So you've got your Part A, you got your Part B, you got your D for drugs, and then you also need a supplemental plan or a gap plan. There's another choice that's called Medicare Advantage plans. And large hospitals in certain areas of the country, for example, here in Albuquerque, Presbyterian sells Advantage plan programs, as do four or five other hospital groups. And in that situation, they call it Part C. Part C, I think of the C as in Club Med. So if you've ever been on a Club Med vacation,
mm-hmm.
everything's included, right? Mm-hmm. You get your drinks and your food and the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Advantage plans or Part C is similar in the sense that all of your care is going to come from that one provider. So you don't really have the option of going to a Loveless hospital if you're in the Presbyterian Advantage Plan system.
Okay.
You're
going to
go get all of your care from the Presbyterian doctors. So this choice confuses people a lot because it's not really exactly clear when you first start studying this and trying to figure out what to do that you have that choice. But all of us have the choice. And my clients, of course, ask me, well, how do I make the choice? And that's a pretty detailed and difficult conversation. We could probably do a whole entire show about that conversation alone. But the gist breaks down to this. If you want to be able to have care outside of your local coverage area, for example, if I wanted to go to Scottsdale to the Mayo Clinic and mm-hmm. see a special heart doctor, if I'm on an Advantage plan, that's not really a choice for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get to work with the local doctors who are very competent and can do their jobs here in town,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have a choice to go outside of my network. And that's going to cost me. So Advantage plans tend to be less expensive. The premiums are lower. So, for example, in this world of Advantage versus supplemental, a lot of the Advantage plans have insurance coverage where there's no additional premium. But the supplemental plans, if you go down that route, all have additional premiums. So it's kind of this balance between, I kind of like the idea of staying in Albuquerque and getting mm-hmm. all my service from one set of doctors mm-hmm. and one set of hospitals, and I don't have to pay additional for it. Or I like this idea of kind of being able to travel and go where I want and mm-hmm. find other doctors if I get sick to help me with things that I might not find these super-duper specialists here in town.
Well, what about these people that, you know, they call them expats that move to Mexico or do something like that? Can they have their Social Security? How's the check handled?
Yeah, so folks who are living abroad can still claim their Social Security check. Medicare, though, does not provide coverage for foreign citizens. So folks who are living in foreign lands need to find some other way to get their health care covered. The supplemental plans that we talked about earlier, there's a range of supplemental plans that you can choose from. They're all lettered with the letters A through the letter N, and they have different coverage. Well, a few of the plans that you can buy there have foreign travel insurance as part of the supplemental plan. No Advantage plan that I know of has that. They'll pay, if you have an emergency and you're out of the coverage area, they'll pay for an emergency, but most of them don't cover foreign travel.
Okay.
So you still need a supplement. You still need an additional insurance plan if you're going to live abroad.
Okay. Well, I knew I threw you a curve there.
Oh, that's good.
You handled it. All right. What does Original Medicare cover?
So Original Medicare doesn't cover everything, but it does cover quite a few things. The Original Medicare program covers hospital stays, doctor visits, medical services, and some preventative services like flu shots and screenings. The hospital coverage, if you just have Original Medicare and you don't have one of these supplemental or Advantage plans, only covers 100% of the first 60 days. So if you choose, and it is a choice, to not have an Advantage plan or a supplemental plan, and you stay in the hospital more than 60 days, you're picking up the ticket for every day after day 60. Similar kind of issue with medical services. You only get coverage for 80% of the doctor and outpatient services, and you have to pick up the other 20%. This is why I encourage everybody, you really need to buy supplemental insurance or sign up for an Advantage plan. So those are the things that Medicare does cover.
Okay.
Some folks are surprised to find out that it doesn't cover this long list of things as well. And the first one that usually comes up is long-term care.
Uh-huh.
So if you're in an assisted living facility or a skilled nursing center, there's no long-term care coverage as part of the Medicare program. That's handled through your own finances or separate insurance. Medicare does not cover care delivered outside the U.S. We talked about that. There's no dental, vision, or hearing care inside the Medicare program, and some older folks find that surprising, as most of us need dental, vision, and hearing as we get older. Mm-hmm. So you have to take care of that on your own. There's no cosmetic surgery. Darn. There's no acupuncture or other alternative care. And so it's not an all-in-one stop like a lot of folks are used to with their employer plans.
All right. How much does Medicare cost?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as we're doing budgeting exercises with our clients, you know, this is one of the places that we spend a lot of time visiting about. I mentioned Part B already, and Part B costs $135 per month per person. Part A is free for most folks who've worked 10 years or more. If you're going to go down the supplemental route, you're going to have to buy a supplemental plan. One of these plans is Plan F. And Plan F, like Frank, has all of the coverage. So if you look down the list, it's the most comprehensive plan. It looks like maybe that one will be leaving us, so you might want to take a look at Plan G, which is the second best plan. But that could cost you $150 or $200 a month. Then you've also got to buy your Part D drug plan, and that could cost you $20 to $50 a month. So depending on the plans you pick, if we've got a Plan F for $200 and a drug plan for $40 and a Part B for $134, $374 a month per person. So you got to double that if you're a couple. And then all those things I mentioned that aren't covered, like hearing, glasses, and long-term care, those have to be handled separately. So we basically started a budgeting point of $6,000 per year per person. About $500 per month per person is the going rate, $12,000 for a couple. And of course, that can get more expensive as you get older.
Yeah, well, you know what? And again, I think probably a lot of people don't take those costs into consideration when they're thinking, well, I'm going to get a gross check of this, but it's not reality.
That's right. And for a lot of folks, this ends up being more expensive than your employer plan. The coverage is good, and I don't hear folks who are on Medicare complaining about the coverage. The coverage and the system is really pretty strong. What I do hear them complaining about is I used to pay $200 a mm-hmm. month for me and my wife because I worked for one of these big employers, and now together we have to pay $800 a month, $1,000 mm-hmm. a month. So it's a really important part of your budgeting process to talk through this.
Okay, well, Doug, I want to thank you for being on the program today. How can our listeners reach you?
Sure. So they can call me at the office. It's area code 505-346-3434, 346-3434, or they're welcome to email me. It's Doug, D-O-U-G, at mgm-llc.com.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much, Doug. All right. I want to thank Doug Lindsay for being on the show. I also want to thank my KIVA team for making Gray Matters Discussing All Things Senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, your favorite place for all things senior, reverse mortgages, and you, our audience, for joining today's broadcast. Thank you for listening to New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, the voice of reverse mortgages and seniors in New Mexico. If you'd like to call, the office phone number is 505-897-4900. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Dirk Gray.